Carol Danielli, I gotta say, I genuinely had some hope that the Jays would come through. I admit I honestly did. Davis Schneider was batting leadoff today. George Springer was down to batting sixth. Kevin Gausman is on the mound. And we get a Vladdy RBI. We get a good hit from Varsho, a two-run double. Jimmy Garcia comes in to put out some fires. And yet, a shaky end to the start for Gausman. Nate Pearson gives up a two-run bomb. A 4-0 lead. A 5-4 loss. The Jays are now 19-25. They are now 6 games under 500. Mid-May, the first time they have been 6 games under 500 since 2019.
That is wild. To me, the game really turned in the span of 8 pitches.
Yeah.
8 pitches in the 8 pitches in the 8th inning. Nate Pearson, I think that's sort of where the ball game shifted, because you go there and I mean, you could sort of see the story writing itself at that point. It's frustrating, show. Like, Jimmy Garcia comes in the 7th, and you're thinking, okay, that's fine. It's a leverage spot. You're going to need to go there. But that then puts you potentially in a position where you're going to be vulnerable either in the 8th or the 9th, depending on where you want to and how you want to deploy your bullpen. And they make the decision that rather than seeing Jimmy Garcia potentially extend and push his outing further, or even bringing in Jordan Romano that spot, because that was the ball, that was the heart of the order coming up at that point heading into the 8th inning, they decide to go to Nate Pearson, and it completely backfires. And I got to be honest, show, like, that decision was indefensible. To me, that's where the game changed, and that's where it was indefensible, because this is a guy that, even if you want to look at where we know they love their analytics, statistically speaking, he has been awful in high leverage situations. Coming into today, teams were hitting 500 against him in high leverage situations this season. High leverage, one run game, two run game. He has been bad, objectively bad, and they threw him out there against a really good ball club that knows how to work at bats and be disciplined, and then, of course, they get burned for it.
That is Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk, live on the Sportsnet Radio Network, also streaming on Sportsnet.ca and the Sportsnet app. Give us a call. Vent away your feelings. 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Text us as well. 590-590, name and location. That is the People's Text Line. And the People's Text Line is always open. I'm going to guess, Daniele, that the tone of the texts and calls are going to be very similar to last night. not that I blame anyone, but I'm going to guess that is the case.
Yep.
And, yeah, I agree with you. The Nate Pearson decision, I want to talk about the Ross Atkins presser with you a little bit as well. We got to do that, okay? Because
sure.
We spent a long chunk of yesterday's post game talking about it and what to expect. And I actually see a couple of texts already, but we'll get to that in a little bit. We got to start by talking about, or continuing to talk about, the Nate Pearson decision. And I'm sitting in here between Ben and Chris. You're sitting behind me here in the booth. And I think we were all a little baffled, especially because earlier in the outing, right, Gausman was running into some trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He was, like, the pitch count was getting a little high. And you look out to the bullpen in left field, and both Yenesis Cabrera and Nate Pearson are getting loose, right?
Yes.
So you think to yourself, okay, if this outing goes really short, they have no choice but to go to one of these guys just to extend it, because they, you know, you need a plan to get the ball from the hands of your starter into the hands of your high leverage relievers. And then Gausman managed to kind of grind through it. He didn't really need it at the moment, but, you know, and we can have a conversation as to whether or not they let Gausman pitch too long, as opposed to, which is not a conversation we have too much about this team. They often were having the conversation about
That's
them
true.
getting guys out with very quick hooks. But maybe it's because he's the ace. Maybe it's because he talked them into it in between innings. Maybe he said he was feeling okay. Maybe it's because it was the bottom of the order.
Yep.
Probably all of those things, honestly. But he stayed out there. He gives up 3 runs, and he comes out of the game. The Jays still holding on to a 4-3 lead at this point. And so you mentioned the other moves you could have made once you saw Pearson start to get loose later in the game in the 8th inning. And I agree with you. I mean, Jimmy Garcia, I actually thought today he did not look quite as sharp as we were used to seeing from
For
him,
sure.
right? He
That's
walks
fair.
A guy, and then he gets down 2-0 in the count to the next guy. And I thought, oh, okay, I'm looking so great here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We can complain about the Danny Jansen AB at the end of the game. Jimmy got helped a little bit in that AB against, I think it was Randy Arozarena, right? So, and Arozarena was not pleased.
He was
so
not happy about it, yes.
The strike zone was not good today. Bring me the challenge review system.
And on
ASAP.
Both sides, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, both sides.
Worth noting, both sides.
Both sides got hosed. And certainly, because the strike zone changed and expanded very late in this ballgame, especially for Danny Jansen, ended up being a not-so-great swing for Jano, and he grounds out and the inning's over with runners on second and third, right? So obviously, that's a part of it. But ultimately, you look at Jimmy Garcia, even though he looked a little rusty or he just didn't look quite as sharp as he usually does, I kind of thought he could have come back out for, even if it was just one more out.
Yeah.
I kind of thought he could have come back out for one more out because you have that faith in Jimmy Garcia. And then, honestly, you could have just gone to Jordan Romano.
That's exactly.
Right? Like you
Why
could,
not?
You could have just bought, and again, does the bullpen for this team need guys who are not named Jimmy Garcia and Jordan Romano to get them outs? Yes. That's a simple truth, right? The answer to that question is yes. But is the time to ask someone who has been shaky at best when, like, the kind of sort of heart of the order is coming up in a one-run game where you are, when in the season you're five games below 500? Like, I say no. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people don't have the most faith in Jordan Romano, but you have more faith in Jordan Romano and Jimmy Garcia than any other pitcher on any other reliever on this roster. That was baffling to me. Even if you didn't want to go to Jordan Romano, you mentioned it, you could have still gone to Trevor Richards.
Trevor Richards,
he came
man.
In anyways.
Exactly. You you burned that bullet anyway.
Yeah.
What was the point? I just it was really baffling. And you know, desperation at some point needs to come into effect. And if this was not a desperate situation where you had an opportunity to win a ball game, throw your absolute best out there and see what they can do for you, then what can we constitute as a desperate situation? Because to me today, desperation called for Jimmy Garcia staying in that ball game, and as you put it, potentially getting one or two more outs to hand it over to Jordan Romano to bridge that gap. There was no need for Nate Pearson to be in that position, and it's way out of his depth. He's not a high leverage guy. I think he's shown that. I know Chris was talking about it on the broadcast. You can almost see it. He oozes discomfort when he's standing on the mound in a leveraged spot. It doesn't fit. And they obviously desperately got burned by that today. Gausman worked his way through things, and you're thinking, okay. And I even tweeted this out. Now it's time for the bullpen gymnastics to kick in.
Yep.
And today, again, it didn't work out for them. The decision making and how they wanted to bridge it to get it from Garcia to Romano, it backfired and it didn't work out. It's a tough loss for a team that is desperate for wins right now.
I see a text here on the text line, 590-590, name and location. You are more than free to continue sending those in. We're here until the top of the next hour. Mike in Kitchener says, why do people, including you right now, blame the pitching after every Jays loss? We know the problem. They don't hit and score runs.
Yep.
That is the problem. And goes on to talk about Ross Atkins, which we'll get to, Mike. Don't worry. We'll get to that. Look, you're right. You're not wrong. Okay,
yeah,
you're not wrong. The problem
totally.
Consistently has been the offense. It's just I don't know. Like I look at it twofold, I suppose, Daniele. It's not I'm not absolving the offense. That's also a problem.
It is
there
a problem.
Can be more than one problem at the same time. Right there and right now, multiple problems for this team are the offense, which has been a problem all season long, and the bullpen, which has now been a problem for what? I probably most of the season, but certainly in the last couple of couple of weeks, because, like I said, they need guys not named Jimmy Garcia and Jordan Romano to get them outs. And also, they need more than four runs, right? But, I mean, generally speaking, they haven't gotten more than four runs.
In this economy, as you tweeted.
And it's very true, yes. Springer RBI in this economy, I was shocked, I got to say. Although good for him, right? But my point is only they were up 4-0, right? Today, it was the pitching that lost them this game. In my opinion, it's certainly both things. But you're not going to go out and win, like, 9-0 every single game is the point.
Yeah, you know, but it's okay. It's tricky to me. I mean, the pitching, it wasn't a collective effort. Like, it wasn't a collective letdown from a pitching standpoint. It was, unfortunately, one guy who couldn't even record an out. That's what did you in. So I think that's even a roster issue where we're looking at the bullpen right now.
Right.
You know, and I think it does speak volumes because Trevor Richards has pitched very well, including today. Now he's gone 6 2/3 without giving up a hit. So he's been in great form. But even the fact that they were hesitant to go to him in that spot tells you sort of what they think of Trevor Richards on a greater scale. And we know Yenesis Cabrera hasn't been great. Tim Mays has had his struggles. They're not certainly going to Eric Swanson in leverage anytime soon again. So then who are they going to in that position? And if it wasn't Trevor Richards, then clearly it was going to be Nate Pearson. I think that is a bit of a roster issue that they've got to sort of sort through right now and deal with and confront, because that's a real, real problem. You can't just, as you put it, rely on those two arms at the back end of your bullpen. And I think Gausman, all things considered, pitched quite well today. Like, I think they were being liberal with allowing him to go as deep as he could, trying to really fight to get through that six. Because I think John Schneider knew, boy, oh boy, I don't want to give this ball over to somebody that I don't trust. I'd much rather have him at the tail end, at the end of the tank, standing out there than whether, and even in their mind, maybe it was even Trevor Richards. They'd much rather have Gausman do that. So I think it's hard to pinpoint it on one person. I do think, to the point made by Mike, I totally agree that the offense is the real root issue here. The bats were pretty good today in a lot of different respects. The final three innings, not great, because they only produced two base runners. And it felt like once the Rays climbed over that mountain and took the lead, you felt like the game was over. It really did.
Yeah, honestly, once I saw the Johnny DeLuca home run,
yep,
I thought to myself, I'm far from being a doomer, I would say, but once I saw that happen, I thought, we have not seen them consistently string together appearances offensively to mount this comeback, right? And I think that's also why I can get behind people who text in, like, it's on the hitting, because, I mean, the truth is, if you are a team that has, like, $220-something million in payroll, and you have World Series aspirations, and you think you can turn things around, you know, you should probably be able to scratch out one run to at least, like, not even to build a bigger cushion, just to tie the game, essentially.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So in the eighth, right, so this happens in the top half, the Rays take the lead. Bottom half, you got Vlad leads it off with a single, he had another good day at the plate. Bo gets hit, so now it's first, second, nobody out.
Yep.
Turner steps up, and he's been fighting it big time.
Over
really
25 now.
Oh. That's rough show. He's been really bad. Yeah. And in that spot, I did think, and I think it was also, I think, mentioned by Chris on the broadcast, do you consider bunting, excuse me. The thing that popped into my mind, to be quite honest with you, do you consider pinch hitting for him? Do you consider, and we ended up seeing Clement and IKF in the ninth, but I thought in that spot, would you consider pinch hitting for him in inserting one of those two guys to lay down a bunt? Probably IKF, because we've seen Clement struggle with that at times. But let's say it's IKF, just to be able to advance the runners. Because in that situation, I think you're playing for one. You have to play for one.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you said, they haven't shown any.
Or you could have pinch hit Clement there. Anyways, if you really wanted to. He's laid down a couple of good bunts.
100%. One of those two guys, I thought, maybe there's a way. Because, again, sample size tells us a story. Turner hasn't been good. And sure enough, what does he do? He doesn't work a productive at-bat to get the runners over. He strikes out. And then from there, the inning pretty much is done. At that point, Springer gets an opportunity, which, again, interesting to see him there in the sixth spot. He gets huge opportunity, didn't pay off. But I thought that was another sort of sliding doors moment in this ballgame.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. They are full. Ian in Toronto getting us kicked off here on Jays Talk. Ian, what's up?
Not much. How's it going, guys?
Good, man. What do you want to talk about today?
One thing that you were mentioning is you keep pushing Romano, but Romano's given up runs in five of his 11 outings this year. So it's hard to say I trust Romano, because right now it's very difficult. Though
Nate Pearson, though.
Yeah,
right?
No. I agree with you. I would have had Romano out there in the eighth over Pearson, especially when you've got two of their top hitters, the 300 hitters out there. If I'm going to lose, I want to lose with Romano on the mound over Nate Pearson. Because at the end of the day, the sad truth is the guy just doesn't have it. It's just not there, and it's time to move on. But, again, we don't have anything to move on to, so that's part of the issue. The other thing that I need to ask is how is John Schneider still the manager of this team? He can't pull the proper bullpen pieces out. He consistently gets that wrong. And then the lineup is completely different every day, when we all know baseball players are very familiar things. So they want the same. They want the same thing over and over again. So he's constantly changing the lineup every single day. And the one issue that I had with today's lineup, David Schneider at the top makes the most sense because the guy gets on base, whether a walk or a hit, he's getting on base. But Varsho at number two, again, these are small sample sizes. He has a going into today, he had a 585 OPS hitting in the second spot, while hitting fifth or seventh combined, he has a 615 slugging. Forget on OPS, just slugging, he's doing better there. So why move him up in the order when obviously it doesn't work? And yes, I do realize he had the double to get two RBI today, which I'm very happy for him. But again, put these guys in a position. If Vlad is only hitting singles, put him second because that's where he belongs at the end of the day. The guy has no power left. And honestly, he's someone I'd be getting rid of tomorrow if I could, because there is no way I'm paying him $20 million plus next year to hit four home runs in 2 months. Soto now has has the same number of home runs as he has extra base hits this year. So again, like the offense was meant to be built around Vlad, and that's a failure at the end of the day because he is not the star player that everybody makes him out to be. He is a above average hitting first baseman who has right now zero power and can barely play his position, evidenced by the fact he threw away another game yesterday. He's already done that twice this year. So at this point, if John Schneider isn't the one really calling the shots and management is, like everybody believes, then something needs to be done. Someone at the top has to start firing people. But like this is a beyond a joke. You could potentially retool and trade assets for 2025, but I'm not even sure if that's even worth the time at this point.
Hey Ian, thanks for the call, man. Okay, so interesting. Okay, a lot there. Okay, so let's. I'm gonna just say this on Vladdy. I don't have anything interesting to say about Vladdy today.
Yep.
Vladdy was not the issue today.
No, not at all.
I agree with the point from Ian that the team was built around him and it has not followed through in the sense that you can't build a team or you can build a team around a superstar. You cannot build a team around an above average player.
Correct.
And that is what the Blue Jays look like right now, and that is at least in part a reason why they are struggling. So I do agree that was a mistake, certainly. I don't think anyone really realized, from fans to the media to probably even the Blue Jays themselves, that Vladdy would be quote-unquote simply only an above-average first baseman. But I don't know. Does he deserve to get paid $1 billion in his next deal? Probably not, right? And that probably is the reason why he doesn't have a long-term contract. So I'm certain the player camp and the team camp are very far apart in where they view valuations. But, I mean, Passan has said this a million times to Blair and Barker, but first baseman, just first of all, don't get paid that much money.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys who are not terrors on the base paths as well as not hitting tons of bombs also don't get paid that much money. And he's kind of all of those things right now.
Well,
so
yeah, I'm trying to even think, like, would Albert Pujols be the most recent example of a marquee first baseman free agent type that got really paid big money?
Maybe, he got paid ages ago.
Like, Goldschmidt got traded, right? Freeman, what did Freeman sign for? That's another one that might be
interesting. But he cuts the cover off
baseball,
but
again,
right?
That's a different animal altogether, right? Like, that's a guy that's in 300 with 30 homers and 100-plus stakes every year. I think Vladdy was the furthest thing from my mind today because I think he performed well and there were very, not to steal the buzzword from Ross Atkins, encouraging signs, but there were some encouraging results today from him, specifically like him driving the ball to the pole side, which was really, really positive. He had the double down the left field line, and that's something we haven't seen a ton of. Would you like more extra base production and more power? 100%. And I think the criticism of the strategy of potentially trying to center this team around not just him, but he and Bo, like, are they transcendent players or are they just above average players? They might be really high end major leaguers, but they're not of the transcendent variety. And I think that's a fair assessment at this point. So I'm with you. I did want to touch on Ian's comment about John Schneider. That one I really did, because this was the first, and we've seen a little bit, but today I really sat there and there were moments where I thought, boy, that's a tough look, man. Like, I just said it. The Pearson thing to me was totally indefensible. And then even talking about what was going on with Turner there in the bottom of the eighth and the letting him hit versus deciding to lay down a bunt or pinch hit for him there. Yeah, it was a rough look for John Schneider today, Show.
It was. It was a rough look for him today. I do believe this. If this continues, right, the Blue Jays are now six games under 500. And I said this when – I'm just looking at the schedule here. I guess this was when the Dodgers were in town.
Yeah,
you and I did it together. On the Saturday of that series. And I said this to you. That was, what, like 3.5 weeks ago, basically?
Yep.
Almost a month ago, I guess, right? And I said this to you then, but what is the breaking point, right? Like where is that point where you say, okay, major changes have to happen? Of course, the fans – On the phones and on the text line, I think believe we are well beyond the pale in that sense, right? We are well beyond the point of major changes needing to have happened, which they haven't happened yet. So if that's the case, then what does management believe that point is? And I genuinely think if we get to the end of this month, because you're playing some winnable games against beatable teams, right? And the Rays, I mean, the Rays are the Rays. The AL East is what it is. This game was easily winnable today as well. Yesterday's game was winnable also.
If you think you're a playoff team, though, you have to win these games.
Oh, yeah. I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying, but if you're you can lose games against other teams that are in your division that are familiar with you and so on. But it's a whole other animal, in my opinion, to go and lose games against the White Sox, Tigers, and Pirates.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, they're those are the next teams coming up starting on Monday. Yeah. They're some of the worst teams in baseball. But the Blue Jays have, like, a worse record than the Detroit Tigers. And I don't know. So
we got to show some respect to the Tigers.
Hey,
but even the Pirates,
they've been playing better.
In fairness, guess what's going to happen when they play the Pirates? John Schneider's going to come out, if he's still the manager at that point. And he's going to say, we got to tip our cap to Jared Jones. We got to tip our cap to Paul Skenes. And we got to move on. Right? Like, that's what's going to happen. We know the routine. Wow, really good pitchers. Like, that's.
I don't want
to. We got to move past that point. Yeah. That point is. That's frustrating in and of itself, is when we hear that stuff all the time. Wait till Garrett Crochet next week.
Yeah, that's what it is. Like, if that's the breaking point, I think. If you're losing these kinds of games to way worse teams, and even the Rays themselves were, like, hovering around 500. And they came into this series one game above 500, and they've went out 1-2 straight against the Toronto Blue Jays. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Giacomo in Windsor. Giacomo, what's on your mind?
I'll get you off speaker. I know you guys are going to get to it. I know Daniele was down there, and I listened to a Ross Austin press conference. What was it like? Obviously, he talks like a lawyer, even though he's not. He doesn't ever really answer anything, give us anything. I don't know. What was the whole point of the press conference? And do you think, like he did it on his own? Or did Mark tell him, hey, have a press conference and, try and calm people down, even though he probably made it worse? Like, what was the point of the press conference? And what did you guys think of it? I know Daniele commented on it, but I get your show. And just seems like, do you think he did it on his own, or do you think he was forced to do it, or was it in collaboration? Thanks, boys.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks, Giacomo. It's a valid question because, yesterday we did like an hour of Jays Talk where I wanted to know what people were expecting to hear from Ross Atkins, and like basically everyone wanted to hear that he was resigning. And he obviously wasn't going to go like stand up in front of the media and resign like live, right? If anything, he would have been fired like last night or something, and then it would have been Mark Spire going to talk to people,
press release first.
That's what I mean. Like that, you don't ever do it live, obviously. But I was curious if he was going to take any sort of responsibility, takes some accountability for anything that's gone on. And then, I mean, the truth is, it's kind of what I think everyone largely expected, right? I mean, he kind of said exactly like he didn't really deviate from anything we have gotten used to hearing from him over the last several years. And, the buzzword, to your point from earlier, was encouraging. We heard the word urgency a lot. That it was kind of par for the course, right? So to Giacomo's point, like, what was the point? I honestly think the point was just after hearing what he had to say, because he didn't really say anything of substance. After hearing what he had to say, I genuinely think the point simply was to just, like, make an appearance to the media.
Yeah,
right?
Show
some face. GMs from other teams do... I don't think they talk a lot, but they certainly talk more than Ross Atkins do, in my opinion.
I don't think it's even like the talking part of it, the presentation of actually conducting a scrum every weeks or sitting in the dugout. It's that they're present and they're visible within the confines of the ballpark on a daily basis. You see that with a lot of other GMs and presidents. In Toronto, you don't see them every day. And so I think at some point, especially with the way the team has performed, there is that impetus. And I wonder, that's a great question by Giacomo, how much of it was collaborative in terms of was it the PR team approaching Ross Atkins, or maybe some combination of both, to say, okay, we think it's an appropriate time for you to go out there and say something about the way the team has played. Like, we need to try and stabilize our messaging here.
I genuinely think at least a part of the consideration for why he spoke when he did also, 10:45 Eastern
on a Saturday
morning of the long weekend, was that maybe you hope that not a lot of people will be there.
No question.
Which did not happen. Basically, every person I see down here on a regular basis was standing down there.
It was jammed.
It was a lot of people down there for considering the time and the place. It was right in front of the Blue Jays dugout on right up the third baseline.
Yep.
And on top of that, it's before, again, to the point of beatable teams coming in here, it's before the White Sox come to town, and it's before you go play the Tigers, and before you go play the White Sox again, and before the Pirates come to town. It's just like, I think if you go out there and you preach consistency, and we believe what's going to happen, we trust the process, we're encouraged, the underlying signs are there, we're getting into good counts, like all the things he said today, and then they go out and do it against a bunch of crappy teams, then you can, like, kind of take credit for it a little bit, right? I don't know if that's, like, wearing too much of a tinfoil hat, but I think that's at least a partial consideration.
I do, too. I think that's a really good point, because they're incredibly meticulous when it comes to this stuff. So they're not going to be half-measured in anything. I feel very positive in saying that was definitely a consideration. Looking at the schedule, saying, this might be the most opportunistic spot to do this, the most favorable spot to do this, even though the team's struggling, but we've got maybe some not freebies, but opportunities to get some wins on the calendar, and this will be the opportunity to satiate the appetite of the fan base a little bit. I think that definitely came into play. Again, to reiterate, I wasn't overly surprised by what he said. I know a lot it angered and infuriated a lot of the fan base, but the messaging was it about what I expected it to be.
Yeah, it was. But like you said to me during the pregame show, that's like pouring like gasoline on a fire.
Kerosene.
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 Is kerosene
on the fire
more dangerous than gasoline?
I think so. I think so.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I think gas is. I don't know all the specifics about all these agents, but I'm pretty sure kerosene isn't the purpose is
Look,
for it to
you pour
ignite
that,
fires.
Any of that stuff on fire, it's going to get worse.
Yeah,
let me tell you.
Totally.
Jay in Lake Simcoe joining us here on Jay's Talk. Jay, what's on your mind?
Oh, hey, guys. I don't want to go into the individual managerial decisions because we've been going through that now for a while. Let's just say that right now, this organization is in trouble. I mean, let's look at what's happening right now. You've got a very high payroll team not performing. You got one of the worst bullpens in baseball. They can't hit with runners in scoring position. And the current regime's been in power for about 1,000 games. I don't really do the math. It's probably been around 1,000 games, give or take. And the farm system's in the bottom third as well. And there's some serious questions that have to be looked at beyond John Schneider, beyond Ross Atkins. You know, it goes to the president and ownership to start really taking a look, because ownership's been pretty good. I'm relatively happy with the payroll. I think the renovations to the stadium have been very good. Been going to the ballpark since many, many years. It's great. And the product on the field, not only is it not good, but the competitive window is closing, because if they don't do it this year, next year is going to be maybe the same or worse, with people maybe being traded. And there's serious questions to be asked. And if we bring it back to this season, because it's not early in the season, but it's also not late, you've got to look at them. They're 6 games under 500. For them to get to 500 by the All-Star break, that's my mark. If you're at 500 by the All-Star break, you're going to be in a wild card battle. They have to win 6, 7, 8, 9 series, okay? You figure they'll lose a series or two here and there. So they've got to keep winning series after series after series with a sweep or two in the middle of that to get to 500. In the meantime, Baltimore and the Yankees have separated themselves from the AL East. There's some surprisingly good teams in the Central. You got Texas and Seattle in the West. I mean, my goodness, what a disaster. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, hey, Jay, thanks for the call, man. I will say this. If, you know, you look at the payroll, but you also look at the structure of a lot of the contracts on this team, Daniele.
Yep.
And there are a lot of certainly impending free agents like Kikuchi and Jansen. And we have conversations about whether or not you want to re-sign them all you want throughout the rest of the year if they continue to play well, or talk about dangling them as trade bait. But like the truth also is that there are a lot of guys on one more years of their deals or two more years of control before they become UFAs, for example. A very large chunk of this roster, including Bo and Vladdy, are at a max of two more seasons under contract, and then it's nothing, right?
Yep.
There's got to be like somebody with warm bodies who are going to suit up for the Blue Jays at some point.
Sure.
But I only bring that up because, I mean, if this continues and we don't, like Jay says, get to the All-Star break and they're not 500 by the All-Star break, and I kind of agree with him. Like, if you get to the All-Star break and you're 500, you're probably not major buyers, but you're probably also not major sellers.
Well, it gives you, like, at that point, a 2-3 week runway to then decide definitively.
Right. So if that's the case, though, right, then what you can do is you can stand pat a little bit and assess. But if that's not the case, then, I mean, it might be worth – it's not really about the rebuilding. It's just, do you really want to let all of these assets go, just, like, let them walk because they don't want to be here anymore or because – you know what I mean? Like, you might as well get something for them. Like,
no.
I just I do wonder genuinely what it's going to look like if what Jay says does not come to pass in – you know, I mean, we're mid-May. The All-Star game is like the third week of July. So we still have about, 10 to 12 weeks probably. Mm-hmm. I'm just ballparking it here between now and the All-Star break. You have 12 weeks, maybe a little less, to figure out what this team is. And you think they have I know people hate it's early. I mean, while it is technically early, you should have a good sense of what this team is at this point.
I think so. I think that's a fair assessment in terms of if you're 500 around the All-Star break, that's probably a good barometer at this point. But in further context to that, because it got me thinking, so they are now 19-25, correct? 19-25 after today, 6 games under .500. Okay. So they won 89 games a year ago. So they need to go 70-48 the rest of the way to be an 89-win team again. Is this a team that looks like they could go?
Say that again?
They have to be 70-48 to go
the rest of the way.
The rest of the way.
Right.
To match their win total from last season.
Jeez.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Can they do that?
That's a winning percentage of like 600 plus, probably.
Like, man, I don't know if I see it. I really don't know that I see that. And just to hit on your point in regards to sort of the roster, the state of the roster, you owe it to the fan base, to the people that cover or support this team that are coming to the ballpark to make prudent decisions. And so if you reach a point where you've got to potentially admit that this iteration, this outfit of the team isn't going to work. Its ceiling is capped and you have to move on.
Right.
And if you pivot and you reach that point and you decide you got to make that decision because you need to reassess and reevaluate your farm system, restock the cupboards to ensure that you potentially have assets at your disposal for the future. And they don't right now. It's not like there's a treasure trove of guys waiting in the wings that you can say,
like,
oh, it's okay, two guys walk, no big deal.
It's not like Aurelvis Martinez coming up and solving these problems.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I get it. Vlad and Bo were supposed to be that for this era of Blue Jays baseball. But at some point, you might have to say, guess what? We cut our losses. We move on. But let's get something to ensure that we can put our franchise in a better position moving forward. The worst thing is if they walk away for nothing.
That's the same conversation we had about the Raptors. I brought this up yesterday, but it's the exact same conversation. People were mad. I think rightly so that Fred VanVleet walked for nothing. People were mad that Pascal Siakam was traded, and he's out there doing ridiculous things for the Pacers on a nightly basis now, which, I mean, good for him. I'm a big fan, but it's kind of burns a little bit.
Sure.
Right? And you could have probably gotten more if you believed that Siakam, if you believed truly that the core and the time has passed, and that, like, I think this is a great point by you, that the ceiling has been capped in some way, shape, or form, you should have traded him earlier.
Yeah.
You should have gotten more back
from
him, right? And I think that is totally where I am at on a very large chunk of the roster. Having said that, people still have to play for the Blue Jays, right? Like, you can't graduate everyone from Buffalo.
Horowitz could be an everyday player.
Yeah, I
suppose.
Nathan Lucas could
be an everyday player.
Yeah, he's 29. He probably
you
could
know what
too.
I mean? Like
yeah,
they, I mean, that's all we hear about. If they talk these guys up, well, okay, They're the guys. Maybe that's the secret sauce. Ross Atkins was out there trying to.
He did talk a lot about the AAA team.
Spewing
he did.
Propaganda
he really did.
Because he's like, guys, just you wait. 3 months from now, they're all up here playing every day.
Good heavens. Let's continue taking your calls. Guy joining us from Maple. Guy, what's on your mind?
Good point, guys. I just want to talk about Tito D and Tito Dumb for a minute. I'm going to start off with Ross Atkins, Tito D. I mean, he had the opportunity this morning to show some passion. His smug, cowardly arrogance. Blue Jays fans have had enough. I mean, this guy reminds me of Trudeau on another level. But this guy here had an opportunity. He had an opportunity to say, you know what? I messed up. I'm not happy with where we're at. I'm not happy with the players. Show some accountability. Get a little bit of respect. But no, he goes into that press conference, like you said, 10:45 on a Saturday morning. Like, we're all fools. Like, we all didn't know what he was trying to do. And he did 22 minutes of just wasting everyone's time. Like, it accomplished absolutely nothing. And, in fact, any baseball fan who's listening to that, they become more upset. And just to get to the last caller, I believe it was, to touch up on some points, this team is not only the fourth oldest team in baseball. Out of all the top 10 payrolls, it has the worst record of any team in the top 10. 24th ranked minor league system. So basically, the money that we're spending, we're getting the least for our money. And on a hitting perspective, 26th in home runs, 26th in triples, 20th in doubles, 29th in hits going into today's game, only one ahead of Washington. A team batting average of .227, which is absolutely a joke. And then our pitchers, I know our starters are doing okay, but we're 27th in strikeouts. We have the 24th highest ERA and the 25th highest WHIP. And a lot of that's attributed to the relief corps. I get it. But the whole point of this is the entire team is a mess. It's a disaster. And just to get on to Tito Dumb, you know, after that hit that made it 4-2, Gosman should have been pulled out of the game. That was it. I appreciate and respect the fact, like, you know, you try to get the guy out of the inning. There's two outs. He's your ace. I get that. Once it goes to 4-2, you know, you take him out. And then you bring in Pearson. And let me ask you guys a question. You know, you bring in Pearson in the eighth inning to get an inning. Tell me how many times Nate Pearson has pitched back-to-back, and in the second inning of that back-to-back, he's had a scoreless inning. You know how many times he's done it this year? Zero. So bring in your fourth-best pitcher, Schneider, and look what you got. Anyways, guys, thanks for letting me vent. I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on the conference, what you would have liked to have seen from Tito D. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Keith. So first, before we get to Ross Atkins again, the Gosman, not the non-pull of Gosman, let's call it. The reason I didn't have a huge issue with it is because I think I did feel more confident in Kevin Gosman than literally any bullpen arm they could have gone to. That's honestly the only reason. If there was even one other guy at that moment, and I suppose you could have brought in Trevor Richards because he's pretty much the only guy who can go multiple innings, right?
He wasn't even up at that point.
And he wasn't up at that point. It was Pearson and Cabrera, which I suppose itself is an indictment of how the bullpen was used today, right?
Yep.
But my only point is that if you could have, like, that was the reason I don't really had a huge issue with it. Like, yeah, did I have to, in the moment, did I say, boy, they probably should get him out of there? I did absolutely think that. I'm sure everyone in this ballpark thought that. Mm-hmm. Everyone watching at home thought that, mm-hmm. as did Guy. But at the same time, the bullpen has been so unreliable that I think you take the chance with your ace, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, because if it was Alek Manoah, who's pitching tomorrow, by the way,
he
was in that
pulled.
Same situation, he's gone.
Yes.
You roll the dice with
even
the bullpen.
Even Kikuchi would have been pulled.
Kikuchi would have been pulled. Honestly, Bassett probably would have been pulled.
Yeah. I think Berríos is the only other one that there's a conversation
because
along those lines.
They have the track record we have seen. Bassett does too, I think, but I still think he would have gotten pulled in that same situation. But you give the benefit of the doubt, in my opinion, to the ace and to the guy who is kind of pitched like an ace this year in Berríos as well. But anyone else, I agree. But you give him a chance to work itself out, and unfortunately he didn't. There were a lot of, like, I think he let the splitter out for Rosario, like, way too much out there. He hit that. And then the Caballero hit was just like a little bloop hit just into the outfield. It just, those don't happen that many times against Kevin Gosman. It just, it was, I do think, as many issues that plague this team that they exist, for me, the not taking Gausman out of the game is kind of like far down the list on today's game in particular.
Absolutely. I don't think it was egregious. I really don't. It wasn't something that I think is blatantly egregious like the Pearson situation was.
Right, right.
So and also, he exits with the lead. You still had the lead at that point.
Yeah.
So I know, yeah. In the moment, I thought, do you do it? Don't you do it? Then I go and I take a peek at my notes, my trusty notes, and I see I'm looking at the arms, and I go, yeah, you know what? 34 might be a better option here. Just let him ride it out and see where we land on this one. So I couldn't be in more agreement with you when it comes to that. It was far down the priority list today of how things unfolded from the sixth inning onwards.
And, yeah, Ross Atkins in the presser.
Yeah.
I just, like we said before, I really do think it – I'm not pleased about it, but it definitely was exactly what I expected.
What did I say in the pregame show? What did I say, show? And it speaks exactly to Gee's point. He used the word passion. And I said, if he would have came out and pulled a Masai Ujiri, even if there was one line in there about where he could convey some passion,
right,
the fan base would respect him more. There'd be more equity established.
Was it Gee or someone else who talked about him talking like a lawyer? It was someone else, right? It was Giacomo.
And Gee also referenced that he referenced that he sounded like Justin Trudeau.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah, honestly. But nevertheless, I mentioned it in the pregame show
as
well.
It is very politician-like, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%. It's very. I use the word diplomatic when he speaks.
Yes. Yes.
He's very diplomatic about trying to explain while not saying anything. He's talking but not giving you anything of substance. Yeah. Very diplomatic in how he goes about it when he deals with the media.
Before we take a break, let's get one more caller in. We'll go back to the phone lines on the other side. Go to the text line as well. Terry joining us here on Jay's Talk from en route to Winnipeg. Terry, what's on your mind?
Hey. Kudos to you guys. You guys are doing a great job. You're always kind to callers, which is remarkable because we're not always nice. And also, just pass along some great kudos. Man, listening to Ben call the game and Chris, I tell you, it's almost back to Tom and Jerry to me. I mean, it's I'm loving it. I'm just loving it. So kudos to all. My question, kind of, and I think you guys almost have answered it, but, you know, when, as baseball analysts, kind of when do you get this gut feel? At what point of a season do you say, okay, I think I know what's going on, I'm going to call it? And you kind of were talking about it just a few moments ago, you know, 19-25, you know, they got to run 70 wins from here on to hit 89, you know, all that stuff. Like, do you feel like you're near a spot where you can maybe make a call and start doing the call-ups and get rid of some of the talent and make some trades? Or are you waiting kind of till the end of May to make that final call?
Hey, Terry, thanks for the call, man. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Terry.
No, I appreciate the call, man. And have a safe drive to Winnipeg. Okay, for me, I think I wait at least until I see them acquit themselves against, quote-unquote, I'm using air quotes here, bad teams, right? And there was a text here from someone that made me chuckle in a sad way. Yeah, here it is. Cam in Cape Breton says, we talk about winnable games coming up. What do you think those teams were playing? Think about coming to play
That's
us.
That's so true.
I mean, it's true.
That's so
it's
true.
Not,
Detroit's
not wrong,
like,
Cam.
Let's go and
yeah.
ride it.
We're like, oh, we're going to get Derek Skubal's going to get 15 strikeouts against these guys. Yeah, like that. They're probably thinking that.
Four game.
Paul Skeen's going to come in here and throw a seven hit list.
Somebody in the text line is like, it looks like they might not get Paul Skeens, which is a blessing in disguise.
That's too bad.
We'll see. But yeah, Jared Jones or Mitch Keller. Great. Quinn Priester's going to come in here and absolutely dot him up.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I'm waiting until I see them play those teams.
Okay.
Because, so if you just look at the schedule, just again, I've said this a couple times. So they finish the series against the Rays tomorrow. White Sox, Tigers for 4, White Sox for 3. There's a day off at the end of May. It's the 30th. A 31st of May, kind of first couple days of June. Pirates are here for 3. And then the Orioles come to town for 4 games in the first week of June. And then, and certainly after that, you're playing the Oakland Athletics, for example. But, I mean, you still have a tough June ahead of you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have Cleveland, Boston, yep. Boston, the Yankees. That's tough. That's a tough stretch. Like anytime you play the AL East, it'll always be tough. Cleveland, they're looking a little better this year. I mean, I'm genuinely afraid of what Jose Ramirez and Josh Naylor are going to come and do here, essentially, or at Progressive Field. So before you get to a relatively tougher part of the schedule, I think I'm waiting until the end of the Pirates series. Even though I think I know what the ceiling of this team is, but I'm going to give them a chance to turn around. But if they're still six games or they're 10 games under 500 when the White Sox are you're leaving the south side of Chicago to come play the Pirates here at the Rogers Center, and that's the end of May, beginning of June, then I think that's it. Truly, I really do. You want to give them as much runway as possible, but like people say it all the time, this is not game 43 or 44 of sample size. It's game 200 plus, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking to be optimistic, so they've played, 44 games, 32 of which have been against teams above 500. So, yes, they haven't played the worst of the worst in Major League Baseball yet. That being said, I think I kind of know, or I have a feeling, and at least for me, what I believe this team is and capable of. And if they, even at their very best, optimal production from the key players and the pitching is productive, I think they're a wild card team at best. That's what they are. If everything is going well.
Yeah.
If everything is going well. And clearly now they've hit a bump in the road here where things aren't going very well and haven't been as steady and consistent offensively and even with the pitching, to where you get a sense that it's just, it might not work. It might not happen. It's going to be difficult. Now, in terms of pragmatically what the decision-making processes look like for the people who are in charge here, I don't think they're going to make any sweeping observations or any concrete decisions probably until July. Probably until mid to late July. Like that is when
All-Star
we're going to get it.
The All-Star break is July 15th is the first day of the All-Star break. That's when that I agree with you, because the All-Star break has traditionally been viewed as like the midway point of the season, right? And if you're under 500, if you're like 10 games under 500 by the midway point of the season, you kind of have to face reality at some point. Like I feel like you have to face reality at some point.
You have to. Because even, I mean, look at the standings today. And I get it. I hate saying this because I think every game is really important. It's early. But look at the standings. Right now, they're five games out of the last wild card spot. They have one, two, three, four, five teams in front of them. Mm. So even if we're going to be more optimistic and positive and there's a
even
long...
The Astros are in front of them.
But
they've had a miserable season.
And they've been awful. And you got to think, naturally, Houston probably got a better chance of turning it around than Toronto does, based on the talent and pedigree that they have. So, yeah, could they jump over Boston? Sure. Detroit? Sure. They're still... Detroit's ahead of them. Texas, Tampa, Minnesota's a good team. Kansas City's been great, and I really feel strongly that they're going to be able to stick. So I just don't know. What does the roadmap look like for them to then get to that point where they're back in that mix? It's tough. It's going to be a difficult road.
Yeah, they have already played one of the most difficult schedules by strength of schedule. I know that means less these days, but they've already played one of the most difficult schedules by SOS in the league, and they have the hardest schedule by SOS remaining for the rest of the season. It's not an easy road. I don't think there are a lot of any clear answers when it comes to the Blue Jays, the present, but also their future. And and when I say future, I mean like the rest of 2020. I'm not even talking about next year. I mean like until the end of September.
What's
of this
the roster going to look like on August 1st?
Yeah.
That's what we're thinking about,
that's
too. Question.
That's Anneli Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. Still some time to give us a call. We're here until the top of the hour. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We'll go to the text line as well on the other side, 590-590, name and location. The people's text line for you is always open. You're listening to Jays Talk, Jays 5-4 losers to the Rays today on the Sportsnet Radio Network. All right, welcome back to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sho Ali, Anneli Franceschi here with you for another 10 minutes. We're here until the top of the hour. Blue Jays losing 5-4 to the Tampa Bay Rays. They lose the series. They're six games under 500 for the first time since 2019. And Alek Manoah is on the mound tomorrow. Although, I will say this, Anneli. Last time out, I know he gave up the three-run jack to Carlos Santana, but largely pitched pretty efficiently and pretty well. So you hope at least there's something repeatable there for tomorrow.
100%. He was very good.
Yeah, I was impressed.
I'm excited to be in the building for that tomorrow. I hope the offense shows up a little bit as well and gives him some run support. But if he's able to replicate, he was locating really well, so that was encouraging. And we'll see if he can build on that this time around tomorrow afternoon.
We also, speaking of someone who has not often gotten a lot of run support, and this year it's pretty much no one, but Kevin Gausman has not often gotten a lot of run support. And today, I thought he pitched okay, but he did got a little bit in his last inning of work. He was asked, and we heard from Bassett yesterday, and he was not pleased. Let's put it that way. He was not pleased. He was annoyed. I don't really blame Bassett. I don't really think anyone does. But today, Kevin Gausman on the mound, and he was asked by Blue Jays reporters postgame, he just wrapped up his availability, about the need for urgency. Let's hear from Kevin Gausman.
You know, I think it goes in waves. I mean, this is a hard game. You know, I don't think the normal fan understands how hard it is to be a position player and play every single day. You know, it's a lot to ask of those guys. And so, yeah, I think at certain times, you know, we come out and our hair's on fire and you can see the glimpses of, you know, wow, this is the team that we can be. But then there's also spurts where, you know, we feel like we're down by 10 runs and we're winning. And so, you know, that's what kind of needs to change more than anything is, you know, we have to feel like we're going to win every game, even if we're down or we're winning, or, you know, we can come back. And, you know, we've had some games of late that we've come back in, but, you know, we just need to be a little bit more, you know, fiery and just kind of, I guess, grab the bull by the horns.
Yeah, you hope. I mean,
interesting.
You hope they can grab the bull by the horns. It's just my own. It's not. I don't have a problem with what Gausman said. It's just trying to buy into that sentiment, I think, is hard because you haven't seen them grab the bull by the horns very often. And I mean, you know, last year you kind of could get away with it because certainly they are a near dead last offensively this year. That last year there were problems. Don't get me wrong, but they were also like what, middle of the road,
middle
offensively.
Of the
pack. Yeah, like they weren't great. They weren't outright terrible. They weren't abjectly awful like they are this year when it comes to actual production and swings and bat speed and all the things that we're talking about these days. But you, in addition to being a middle-of-the-road offense last year, you also had elite pitching last year. And this year you're getting, like, very good pitching with pretty terrible offense. Like, I think everything has largely taken a step back this year.
Is it, to use Leafs terminology here...
Oh, don't do it.
Country club lifestyle?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm asking the question, like, is it that they don't feel that? Like, come on, if you can't get fired up, energized, and motivated to play, like, I think today they were in it, obviously. They were in it. You could sense the urgency was there. But you're six games under 500 now, and if that's not enough motivation to get you going on a daily basis, I mean, come on. You're in the major leagues.
There's a text here, to your point, from Michael and Markham, and Michael says... Didn't Bo Bichette the other day saying quote unquote he liked how we competed, end quote, sound just like John Tavares anytime in the playoffs in the last few years? And didn't Ross Atkins just sound like Leafs management anytime in the last 5 years until 2 weeks ago? Like, kind of.
Yeah,
but
man.
But I don't know. I don't know that I would go so far as to say that they share the same problems with the Leafs. Certainly, I think there are some for the Toronto based fans. I know there are a lot of Jays fans who are not Leafs fans, obviously, because it's a countrywide fan base. But I do see that parallels in the sense that the Leafs go to the playoffs, the guys who scored a bazillion points in the regular season largely did nothing.
They disappear.
And it's the same kind of problem you're talking about in the sense that this team goes as far as the guys, the top run producers go, i.e. Bo, i.e. Vladdy, and until recently George Springer, right? So I see the parallels. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not ready to really draw a solid line in pen from the Leafs to the Jays.
No, it's just funny, but I think clearly that, you know, to me, those comments are interesting because I think that speaks to more, that's more of a leadership thing.
Right.
That's more of a intangibles clubhouse thing than it is something that's happening on the field or metric-based or decision-making-based. That's a clear cultural problem. And for the guy that is one of your leaders, one of your more senior members of the team to step up and say that, I think that holds weight.
Sure.
And I think there's something to it because if he can clearly feel that on any given day, this isn't him saying it after a week, right? This is months. So I think he feels the weight of that for sure.
I wanted to read a couple more texts here before we go, Daniele.
Yep.
I see one here from Mike and Cole Harbor. Regarding, quote-unquote, building around Vladdy, it doesn't count as building around a guy if you don't build with good pieces. They needed the bats in the offseason and didn't get them. That's the fatal flaw with this team and will continue to be. Sadly, the best opportunity to fix this is gone. And you know what? And, and he's right. He says last offseason, because this past offseason, not the previous offseason, yeah. but last offseason, as much as I would have liked for them to go get Teoscar Hernandez, you know what? A lot of the free agent bats that you could have gotten gone out to get, like Jaime Candelario, Jorge Soler, JD Martinez, they've all kind of been bad so
Absolutely.
Far this year. They've all largely, like, honestly, I know it's this sounds wild to say, IKF might be one of the better signings in the free agent class.
Oh, I don't
know. Not because of dollars, but if you look at everyone who's produced, like, beyond the obvious,
okay,
it's Shohei Ohtani and Cody Bellinger,
yes.
right? In terms of position players, there haven't been a lot of really, like, guys who were available last year who have jumped off the page necessarily.
No, you're absolutely right.
Matt Chapman, Tommy Pham, Jock Peterson.
You keep going down the list. Like, nobody's jumping off the page like they're aside from Teoscar, who's been
Amed Rosario, I suppose.
But I was
going to
say that was the guy.
Fine.
That's the guy I was going to say because they're paying him twice as much, if not way more.
I think more than that actually.
Like, and Amed Rosario's doing just fine. He's fitting pretty nicely with the Rays. Also, that Johnny DeLuca, by the way, God, that's a great find by the Rays in that Glasnow deal. 25th round pick, and this guy just gets barrels consistently. He looked fantastic today, by the way.
That guy has stolen playing time from Jose Siri because that's how good he should play. And Jose Siri, all he did was hit bombs last
year.
That's
true. He was awesome. So, but when's the last time the Jays did that?
Yeah.
Like, when is the last time they've mined that kind of player?
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what you need. You need to win those. And they haven't done that. Even draft picks, you got to find the ones that don't hit. Like, David Schneider's a great story.
Sure, yeah.
You need more of those, though. You really do. Because your first round, second round picks aren't always going to materialize the way you hoped they would. But you need the odd one later in a draft that's going to deliver for you. Or the player that nobody knows their name when they're acquired, but they actually become something for you. We haven't had that here in Toronto.
And that, you know what that is, to go back to circle back on Ross Atkins and the scouting department run by him, obviously. But it's just that is somewhat of an indictment on the development of this team, right? The farm. I mean, like when Shapiro and Atkins came in, I forget exactly who was of the two of them, but they kind of like scolded Alex Anthopoulos for leaving the farm system relatively bare.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, and yes, they have found wins and gems in people like David Schneider. And you hope there's other guys like that, too. But they haven't, like, it hasn't happened to the point where you can just reach out into the minors and pluck a Johnny DeLuca up and bring him up to the majors and have him produce right away. Like, it's really only been David Schneider. And you hope Addison Barger is that. Maybe Spencer Horwitz can be that. Maybe Nathan Lucas can be that. But they're not playing for the Jays right now. So you can't, you don't really know.
Yeah, you don't really know. And they're, and at that point, especially with these guys too, like Lucas and Horwitz, they're not young either.
No, yeah.
Like I agree. In theory, by MLB standards, they don't have the experience. But we're talking about guys that are still have been pros for quite some time here. Eventually, you're no longer a prospect. You got to be something. You're not. There's such a thing as a quad A player, right? Like, it's that guy that gets caught in between. The Jays seem to have a lot of those quad A players right now in their system.
Well, Daniele, as Blair is fond of saying, you get to do it all over again tomorrow.
Absolutely.
They get to try and salvage the series and try and not get swept. They actually haven't gotten swept a lot, I think, at all this year. So they're going to try and avoid that happening against the Rays tomorrow. Alek Manoah will throw for the Blue Jays. That is Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Malton and Milton. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Daniele, for Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Andrew Adams, I'm Sho Ali. We are out of here. I'll be back solo for Jays Talk tomorrow to put a bow on things. Have a great Saturday, everyone. I'm off to watch Canucks and Oilers. We'll talk to you later.